Daenerys. She was breaking her fast on a bowl of cold shrimp and persimmon soup when Eri brought her a Carthian gown, an airy confection of ivory samite patterned with seed pearls. "Take it away," Danny said. "The docks are no place for ladies' finery." If the milkman thought her such a savage, she would dress the part for them. When she went to the stables, she wore faded sand silk pants and woven grass sandals. Her small breast moved freely beneath a painted Dothraki vest, and a curved dagger hung from her medallion belt. Jiqui had braided her hair Dothraki fashion and fastened a silver bell to the end of the braid. "I have won no victories," she tried telling her handmaid when the bell tinkled softly. Jiqui disagreed. "You burned the Magi in their house of dust and sent their souls to hell." "That was Drogon's victory, not mine," Danny wanted to say, but she held her tongue. The Dothraki would esteem her all the more for a few bells in her hair. She chimed as she mounted her silver mare, and again with every stride, but neither Ser Jorah nor her blood riders made mention of it. To guard her people and her dragons in her absence, she chose Rakaro. Jogo and Aego would ride with her to the waterfront. They left the marble palaces and fragrant gardens behind and made their way through a poorer part of the city where modest brick houses turned blind walls to the street. There were fewer horses and camels to be seen and a dearth of palanquins, but the streets teemed with children, beggars, and skinny dogs the color of sand. Pale men in dusty linen skirts stood beneath arched doorways to watch them pass. "They know who I am, and they do not love me," Danny could tell from the way they looked at her. Ser Jorah would sooner have tucked her inside her palanquin, safely hidden behind silken curtains, but she refused him. She had reclined too long on the satin cushions, letting oxen bear her hither and yon. At least when she rode, she felt as though she were getting somewhere. It was not by choice that she sought the waterfront. She was fleeing again. Her whole life had been one long flight, it seemed. She had begun running in her mother's womb and never once stopped. How often had she and Viserys stolen away in the black of night, a bare step ahead of the usurper's hired knives? But it was run or die. Zaro had learned that Pyat Pree was gathering the surviving warlocks together to work ill on her. Danny had laughed when he told her. "Was it not you who told me warlocks were no more than old soldiers, vainly boasting of forgotten deeds and lost prowess?" Zaro looked troubled.
"And so it was then, but now I am less certain. It is said that the glass candles are burning in the house of Urath the Nightwalker, that have not burned in 100 years. Ghost grass grows in the garden of Gathain. Phantom tortoises have been seen carrying messages between the windowless houses on Warlock's Way, and all the rats in the city are chewing off their tails. The wife of Mathis Malarawan, who once mocked a warlock's drab moth-eaten robe, has gone mad and will wear no clothes at all. Even fresh-washed silks make her feel as though 1,000 insects were crawling on her skin. And blind Sybassian, the eater of eyes, can see again, or so his slaves do swear. A man must wonder," he sighed. "These are strange times in Carth, and strange times are bad for trade. It grieves me to say so, yet it might be best if you left Carth entirely, and sooner rather than later."
Zara stroked her fingers reassuringly.
"You need not go alone, though. You have seen dark visions in the Palace of Dust, but Zaro has dreamed brighter dreams. I see you happily abed, with our child at your breast. Sail with me around the Jade Sea, and we can yet make it so." It is not too late. Give me a son, my sweet song of joy.
Give you a dragon, you mean? I will not wed you, Zara. His face had grown cold at that.
Then go.
But where?
Somewhere, far from here.
Well, perhaps it was time. The people of Akalasar had welcomed the chance to recover from the ravages of the Red Waste, but now that they were plump and rested once again, they began to grow unruly. Dothraki were not accustomed to staying long in one place. They were a warrior people, not made for cities. Perhaps she had lingered in Karth too long, seduced by its comforts and its beauties. It was a city that always promised more than it would give you, it seemed to her, and her welcome, here, had turned sour since the House of the Undying had collapsed in a great gout of smoke and flame. Overnight, the Karthian had come to remember that dragons were dangerous. No longer did they vie with each other to give her gifts. Instead, the Tourmaline Brotherhood had called openly for her expulsion, and the ancient Guild of Spices for her death. It was all Zaro could do to keep the 13 from joining them. But where am I to go? Sir Jorah proposed that they journey farther east, away from her enemies in the Seven Kingdoms. Her blood riders would sooner have returned to their great grass sea, even if it meant braving the Red Waste again. Dany herself had toyed with the idea of settling in Vaes Tolaro until her dragons grew great and strong, but her heart was full of doubts. Each of these felt wrong somehow, and even when she decided where to go, the question of how she would get there remained troublesome. Zarozo and Daxus would be no help to her. She knew that now. For all his professions of devotion, he was playing his own game, not unlike Pyat Pree. The night he asked her to leave, Dany had begged one last favor of him.
"An army, is it?"
Zaro asked.
"A kettle of gold? A galley, perhaps?"
Dany blushed. She hated begging. "A ship, yes." Zaro's eyes had glittered as brightly as the jewels in his nose.
"I am a trader, Khaleesi, so perhaps we should speak no more of giving, but rather of trade. For one of your dragons, you shall have 10 of the finest ships in my fleet. You need only say that one sweet word."
"No," she said.
"Alas," Zaro sobbed. "That was not the word I meant."
"Would you ask her mother to sell one of her children?"
"Why ever not, eh? They can always make more. Mothers sell their children every day."
"Not the mother of dragons?"
"Not even for 20 ships."
"Not for 100. His mouth curled downward.
"I do not have 100, but you have 3 dragons, eh? Grant me one for all my kindnesses. You will still have 2, and 30 ships as well."
30 ships would be enough to land a small army on the shores of Westeros. "But I do not have a small army." "How many ships do you own, Zaro?"
83, if one does not count my pleasure barge."
"And your colleagues in the 13?
"Among us all, perhaps 1,000.
"And the Spices, and the Tourmaline Brotherhood?"
"Their trifling fleets are of no account."
"Even so," she said, "tell me."
1,200 or 1,300 for the Spices, no more than 800 for the Brotherhood."
"And the Ashai, the Bravasi, the Summer Islanders, the Ibanese, and all the other peoples who sail the Great Salt Sea, how many ships do they have all together?"
"Many and more," he said irritably. "What does this matter?"
"I am trying to set a price on one of the 3 living dragons in the world." Dany smiled at him sweetly. "It seems to me that 1/3 of all the ships in the world would be fair." Zara's tears ran down his cheeks on either side of his jewel-encrusted nose.
"Did I not warn you not to enter the Palace of Dust, eh? This is the very thing I feared. The whispers of the warlocks have made you as mad as Malarowin's wife. A third of all the ships in the world? I say, ha!
Danny had not seen him since. His seneschal brought her messages, each cooler than the last. She must quit his house. He was done feeding her and her people. He demanded the return of his gifts, which she had accepted in bad faith. Her only consolation was that at least she had had the great good sense not to marry him. The warlocks whispered of three treasons, once for blood, and once for gold, and once for love. The first traitor was surely Miramazdur, who had murdered Khal Drogo and their unborn son to avenge her people. Could Pyat Pri and Zarozo and Daxus be the second and the third? She did not think so. What Pyat did was not for gold, and Zaro had never truly loved her. The streets grew emptier as they passed through a district given over to gloomy stone warehouses. Ego went before her, and Jogo behind, leaving Ser Jorah Mormont at her side. Her bell rang softly, and Danny found her thoughts returning to the Palace of Dust once more, as the tongue returns to a space left by missing tooth. Child of three, they had called her. Daughter of death, slayer of lies, bride of fire. So many threes. Three fires, three mounts to ride, three treasons. The dragon has three heads, she sighed. Do you know what that means, Jorah?
Your Grace, the sigil of House Targaryen is a three-headed dragon, red on black.
I know that, but there are no three-headed dragons.
The three heads were Aegon and his sisters.
Visenya and Rhaenys, she recalled. I am descended from Aegon and Rhaenys through their son Aenys and their grandson Jaehaerys.
Blue lips speak only lies. Isn't that what Zaro told you? Why do you care what the warlocks whispered? All they wanted was to suck the life from you. You know that now.
Perhaps, she said reluctantly. Yet the things I saw...
A dead man in the prow of a ship, a blue rose, a banquet of blood. What does any of it mean, Khaleesi? A mummer's dragon, you said. What is a mummer's dragon, pray?
A cloth dragon on poles, Danny explained. Mummers use them in their follies, to give the heroes something to fight. Sir Jorah frowned. Danny could not let it go. His is the song of ice and fire, my brother said. I'm certain it was my brother, not Viserys, Rhaegar. He had a harp with silver strings. Sir Jorah's frown deepened until his eyebrows came together.
Prince Rhaegar played such a harp, he conceded. You saw him?
She nodded. There was a woman in a bed with a babe at her breast. My brother said the babe was the prince that was promised, and told her to name him Aegon.
Prince Aegon was Rhaegar's heir by a liar of Dawn, Sir Jorah said. But if he was the prince that was promised, the promise was broken along with his skull when the Lannisters dashed his head against a wall.
I remember, Danny said sadly. They murdered Rhaegar's daughter as well, the little princess. Rhaenys, she was named, like Aegon's sister. There was no Visenya, but he said the dragon has three heads. What is the song of ice and fire?
It's no song I've ever heard.
I went to the warlocks hoping for answers, but instead they've left me with 100 new questions. By then there were people in the streets once more.
Make way!
Aegor shouted, while Jogo sniffed at the air suspiciously.
I smell it, Khaleesi, he called. The poison water!
The Dothraki distrusted the sea and all that moved upon it. Water that a horse could not drink was water they wanted no part of. They will learn, Danny resolved. I braved their sea with Khal Drogo. Now they can brave mine. Carth was one of the world's great ports, its great sheltered harbour, a riot of colour and clangour and strange smells. Wine sinks, warehouses, and gaming dens line the streets, cheek by jowl with cheap brothels and the temples of peculiar gods. Cut purses, cut throats, spell sellers, and money changers mingled with every crowd. The waterfront was one great marketplace where the buying and selling went on all day and all night, and goods might be had for a fraction of what they cost at the bazaar, if a man did not ask where they came from. Wizened old women, bent like hunchbacks, sold flavored waters and goat's milk from glazed ceramic jugs strapped to their shoulders. Seamen from half a hundred nations wandered amongst the stalls, drinking spice liquors and trading jokes in queer-sounding tongues. The air smelled of salt and frying fish, of hot tar and honey, of incense and oil and sperm. Ego gave an urchin a copper for a skewer of honey-roasted mice and nibbled them as he rode. Jogo bought a handful of fat white cherries. Elsewhere they saw beautiful bronze daggers for sale, dried squids, and carved onyx, a potent magical elixir made of virgin's milk and shade of the evening, even dragon's eggs, which looked suspiciously like painted rocks. As they passed the long stone quays reserved for the ships of the 13, she saw chests of saffron, frankincense, and pepper being offloaded from Zaro's ornate vermilion kiss. Beside her, casks of wine, bales of sour leaf, and pallets of striped hides were being trundled up the gangplank onto the bride in azure, to sail on the evening tide. Farther along, a crowd had gathered around the spicer galley, Sunblaze, to bid on slaves. It was well known that the cheapest place to buy a slave was right off the ship, and the banners floating from her mast proclaimed that the Sunblaze had just arrived from Astapor on Slaver's Bay. Danny would get no help from the 13, the Tourmaline Brotherhood, or the Ancient Guild of Spices. She rowed her silver past several miles of their quays, docks, and storehouses, all the way out to the far end of the horseshoe-shaped harbour where the ships from the Summer Islands, Westeros, and the Nine Free Cities were permitted to dock. She dismounted beside a gaming pit where a basilisk was tearing a big red dog to pieces amidst a shouting ring of sailors. Ego, Jogo, you will guard the horses while Sir Jorah and I speak to the captains. As you say, Khaleesi, we will watch you as you go. It was good to hear men speaking Valyrian once more, and even the common tongue, Danny thought, as they approached the first ship. Sailors, dock workers, and merchants alike gave way before her, not knowing what to make of the slim young girl with silver-gold hair, who dressed in the Dothraki fashion and walked with a knight at her side. Despite the heat of the day, Sir Jorah wore his green wool surcoat over chain mail, the black bear of Mormont sewn on his chest. But neither her beauty nor his size and strength would serve with the men whose ships they needed.
"You require passage for 100 Dothraki, all their horses, yourself and this knight, and 3 dragons?" said the captain of the great Cog, Ardent Friend, before he walked away laughing. When she told Elysene on the trumpeter that she was Daenerys Stormborn, Queen of the 7 Kingdoms, he gave her a dead-faced look and said, "Aye, and I'm Lord Tywin Lannister, and shit gold every night."
The cargo master of the Moorish galley, Silken Spirit, opined that dragons were too dangerous at sea, where any stray breath of flame might set the rigging afire. The owner of Lord Faro's belly would risk dragons, but not Dothraki.
"I'll have no such godless savages in my belly, I'll not."
The two brothers who captained the sister ships, Quicksilver and Greyhound, seemed sympathetic and invited them into the cabin for a glass of Arbor Red. They were so courteous that Danny was hopeful for a time, but in the end, the price they asked was far beyond her means and might have been beyond Zara's. Pinchbottom Petto and Slow-Eyed Maid were too small for her needs. Bravo was bound for the Jade Sea, and Magister Manolo scarce looked seaworthy. As they made their way toward the next quay, Sir Jorah laid a hand against the small of her back.
"Your Grace, you're being followed. No, do not turn."
He guided her gently towards a brass seller's booth.
"This is a noble work, my queen," he proclaimed loudly, lifting a large platter for her inspection. "See how it shines in the sun."
The brass was polished to a high sheen. Danny could see her face in it, and when Sir Jorah angled it to the right, she could see behind her.
"I see a fat brown man and an older man with a staff. Which is it?" "Both of them," Sir Jorah said. "They have been following us since we left Quicksilver."
The ripples in the brass stretched the strangers queerly, making one man seem long and gaunt, the other immensely squat and broad.
"A most excellent brass, great lady," the merchant exclaimed. "Bright as the sun, and for the mother of dragons, only 30 others."
The platter was not worth more than 3. "Where are my guards?" Danny declared.
"This man is trying to rob me."
For Jorah, she lowered her voice and spoke in the common tongue.
"They may not mean me ill. Men have looked at women since time began. Perhaps it's no more than that."
The brass seller ignored their whispers.
30, did I say 30? Oh, such a fool I am. The price is 20 honors.
All the brass in this booth is not worth 20 honors, Danny told him as she studied the reflections. The old man had the look of Westeros about him, and the brown-skinned one must weigh 20 stone. The usurper offered a lordship to the man who kills me, and these two are far from home. Or could they be creatures of the warlocks, meant to take me unawares?
10, Khaleesi, because you are so lovely. Huh? Use it for a looking-glass. Only brass this fine could capture such beauty.
It might serve to carry night soil. If you threw it away, I might pick it up, so long as I did not need to stoop. But pay for it? Danny shoved the platter back into his hands.
Worms have crawled up your nose and eaten your wits. 8 honors, he cried. My wife will beat me and call me a fool, but I am a helpless child in your hands. Come, 8. That is less than it is worth.
What do I need with dull brass, when Zarozo and Daxus feeds me off plates of gold? As she turned to walk off, Danny let her glance sweep over the strangers. The brown man was near as wide as he looked in the platter, with a gleaming bald head and the smooth cheeks of a eunuch. A long, curving arrack was thrust through the sweat-stained yellow silk of his belly band. Above the silk, he was naked, but for an absurdly tiny iron-studded vest. Old scars crisscrossed his tree-trunk arms, huge chest, and massive belly, pale against his nut-brown skin. The other man wore a traveller's cloak of undyed wool, the hood thrown back. Long white hair fell to his shoulders, and a silky white beard covered the lower half of his face. He leaned his weight on a hardwood staff, as tall as he was. Only fools would stare so openly if they meant me harm. All the same, it might be prudent to head back toward Jogo and Ego. "The old man does not wear a sword," she said to Jorah in the common tongue, as she drew him away. The brass merchant came hopping after them.
5 honors for 5, it is yours. It was meant for you.
Sir Jorah said,
"A hardwood staff can crack a skull as well as any mace."
4, I know you want it.
He danced in front of them, scampering backward as he thrust the platter at their faces.
"Do they follow?"
Lift that up a little higher,
the knight told the merchant.
"Yes. The old man pretends to linger at a potter's stall, but the brown one has eyes only for you."
2 honors! 2! 2!
The merchant was panting heavily from the effort of running backward. "Pay him before he kills himself," Danny told Sir Jorah, wondering what she was going to do with a huge brass platter. She turned back as he reached for his coins,
intending to put an end to this mummer's farce. The blood of the dragon would not be herded through a bazaar by an old man and a fat eunuch. A Carthene stepped into her path.
"A mother of dragons for you."
He knelt and thrust a jewel box into her face. Danny took it almost by reflex. The box was carved wood, its mother-of-pearl lid inlaid with jasper and chalcedony. "You are too generous." She opened it. Within was a glittering green scarab carved from onyx and emerald. Beautiful, she thought. This will help pay our passage. As she reached inside the box, the man said,
"I'm so sorry,"
but she hardly heard. The scarab unfolded with a hiss. Danny caught a glimpse of a malign black face, almost human, and an arched tail dripping venom. And then the box flew from her hand in pieces, turning end over end. Sudden pain twisted her fingers. As she cried out and clutched her hand, the brass merchant let out a shriek. A woman screamed, and suddenly the Carthene were shouting and pushing each other aside. Sir Jorah slammed past her, and Danny stumbled to one knee. She heard the hiss again. The old man drove the butt of his staff into the ground. Ego came riding through an egg seller stall and vaulted from his saddle. Jogo's whip cracked overhead. Sir Jorah slammed the eunuch over the head with a brass platter. Sailors and whores and merchants were fleeing or shouting or both.
"Your Grace, a thousand pardons," the old man knelt. "It's dead. Did I break your end?"
She closed her fingers, wincing. "I don't think so."
"I had to knock it away."
He started, but her blood riders were on him before he could finish. Ego kicked his staff away, and Jogo seized him around the shoulders, forced him to his knees, and pressed a dagger to his throat. "Khaleesi, we saw him strike you. Would you see the color of his blood? Release him." Danny climbed to her feet. "Look at the bottom of his staff. Blood of my blood." Sir Jorah had been shoved off his feet by the eunuch. She ran between them as Arik and Longsword both came flashing from their sheaths. "Put down your steel. Stop it."
"Your Grace," Mormont lowered his sword only an inch, "these men attacked you."
"They were defending me." Danny snapped her hand to shake the sting from her fingers. "It was the other one, the Carthene." When she looked around, he was gone. He was a sorrowful man. "There was a manticore in that jewel box he gave me. This man knocked it out of my hand." The brass merchant was still rolling on the ground. She went to him and helped him to his feet. "Were you stung?"
"No, good lady," he said, shaking, "or else I would be dead. But it touched me. When it fell from the box, it landed on my arm."
He had soiled himself, she saw, and no wonder. She gave him a silver for his trouble and sent him on his way before she turned back to the old man with a white beard. "Who is it that I owe my life to?"
"You owe me nothing, Your Grace. I am called Arst, and though Belwas named me Whitebeard on the voyage here."
Though Jogo had released him, the old man remained on one knee. Ego picked up his staff, turned it over, cursed softly in Dothraki, scraped the remains of the manticore off on a stone, and handed it back. "And who is Belwas?" she asked. The huge brown eunuch swaggered forward, sheathing his arak.
"I am Belwas. Strong Belwas they name me, in the fighting pits of Marine. Never did I lose."
He slapped his belly, covered with scars.
"I let each man cut me once before I kill him. Count the cuts, and you will know how many strong Belwas are slain."
Danny had no need to count his scars. There were many. She could see at a glance. "And why are you here, strong Belwas?"
"From Marine I am sold to Cahor, and then to Pentas, and the fat man with sweet stink in his hair. He it was who sent strong Belwas back across the sea, and old White Beard to serve him."
"The fat man with sweet stink in his hair. Illyrio?" she said.
You were sent by Magister Illyrio?
We were, Your Grace, old Whitebeard replied. The Magister begs your kind indulgence for sending us in his stead, but he cannot sit a horse as he did in his youth, and sea travel upsets his digestion.
Earlier had spoken in the Valyrian of the Free Cities, but now he changed to the common tongue.
I regret if we caused you alarm. If truth be told, we were not certain. We expected someone more...
Regal? Danny laughed. She had no dragon with her, and her raiment was hardly queenly. You speak the common tongue well, asked Tan. Are you of Westeros?
I am. I was born on the Dornish marches, Your Grace. As a boy, I squired for a knight of Lord Swan's household.
He held the tall staff upright beside him, like a lance in need of a banner.
Now I squire for Belwas.
A bit old for such, aren't you?
Sir Jorah had shouldered his way to her side, holding the brass platter awkwardly under his arm. Belwas's hard head had left it badly bent.
Not too old to serve my liege, Lord Mormont.
Oh, you know me as well.
I saw you fight a time or two. At Lannisport, when you near unhorsed the Kingslayer, and on Pike, there as well. You do not recall Lord Mormont?
Sir Jorah frowned.
Your face seems familiar, but there were hundreds at Lannisport and thousands on Pike, and I am no lord. Bear Island was taken from me. I am but a knight.
A knight of my Queen's Guard, Danny took his arm, and my true friend and good counsellor. She studied Arston's face. He had a great dignity to him, a quiet strength she liked. Rise, Arston Whitebeard. Be welcome, strong Belwas. Sir Jorah, you know, Co-Ego and Co-Jogo are blood of my blood. They crossed the Red Waste with me and saw my dragons born.
Horsa boys, Belwas grinned toothily. Belwas has killed many horsa boys in the fighting pits. They jingle when they die.
Ego's Arik leapt to his hand.
Never have I killed a fat brown man. Belwas will be the first.
Sheathe your still, blood of my blood, said Danny. This man comes to serve me. Belwas, you will accord all respect to my people, or you will leave my service sooner than you'd wish, and with more scars than when you came. The gap-toothed smile faded from the giant's broad brown face, replaced by a confused scowl. Men did not often threaten Belwas, it would seem, and less so girls a third his size. Danny gave him a smile to take a bit of the sting from the rebuke. Now tell me, what would Magister Illyrio have of me, that he would send you all the way from Pentos?
He would have the dragons, said Belwas gruffly, and the girl who makes them, he would have you.
Belwas has the truth of us, Your Grace, said Arstan. We were told to find you and bring you back to Pentos. The Seven Kingdoms have need of you. Robert the Usurper is dead and the realm bleeds. When we set sail from Pentos, there were four kings in the land, and no justice to be had.
Joy bloomed in her heart, but Danny kept it from her face. I have three dragons, she said, and more than 100 in my Khalasar, with all their goods and horses.
It is no matter, boomed Belwas. We take all. The fat man hires three ships for his little silver-haired queen. It is so, Your Grace,
Arston Whitebeard said.
The great cog, Sir Dulian, is berthed at the end of the quay, and the galleys, Summer Sun, and Jozo's Prank, are anchored beyond the breakwater.
Three heads has the dragon, Danny thought, wondering. I shall tell my people to make ready to depart at once, but the ships that bring me home must bear different names.
As you wish, said Arstan. What names would you prefer?
Vhagar, Daenerys told him, Meraxes, and Balerion. Paint the names on their hulls in golden letters 3 feet high, Arstan. I want every man who sees them to know the dragons are returned.